Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes. Live from the Big Brooklyn Studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necro Nemapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Moncada, episode 79, James Herbert's The Fog, the story of a man and the weather phenomenon that loves him. And now, a Necro Nemapod.
John Holman.
John, take two and begin.
So if this first part of this episode doesn't sound very fresh, it's because we're retaping it.
New computer. Don't get me started. Anyway, here we are.
Yeah, the fog, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
But we happen to know now, which we didn't know when we started the first time, that the main character's name is John Holman.
Yes.
We still don't know what his girlfriend's name is.
No, that girl. I'm calling her that girl.
We're going to call her Mrs. Protagonist.
Yes.
Fiancé Protagonist.
Okay.
So, James Herbert. Not Frank Herbert.
No, not. The Dune, the Fog.
It's all weather.
It's all just stuff.
So, here's a book.
Why don't you do a little, like, why don't we do a little plot summary?
Okay.
Since many people probably haven't read it. Well, you couldn't find it at the library if your life depended on it.
It depends on the quality of your library system.
I'm starting to doubt the quality of our library system.
Well, you know, this is not the kind of book that they feel obliged to keep in perpetuity. It's not the freaking Great Gatsby. It's more like The Beautiful and the Damned.
Our hero, John Holman.
John Holman, our hero, works as a spy for an environmental protection agency in Britain.
I wouldn't call him a spy. I would just call him an
investigator.
Yeah,
he's an investigator, undercover investigator, and he is checking something out in Northern England. And an earthquake happens and releases this gas through a crack in the earth that infects him, kills a bunch of people. Destroys a town,
gas doesn't kill people. The earthquake does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. People die for all kinds of reasons in this book.
But in the beginning,
it's the earthquake swallowing people up. As it turns out,
but he goes mad. But he gets hospitalized, so he's sort of protected from himself.
Better, yep.
And he gets better.
But the gas
within a very quick amount of time.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's, you know, British healthcare system.
Yes.
But the gas, unbeknownst to anybody, has coalesced and is moving across the countryside, causing havoc. It takes the British authorities really a depressingly long amount of time.
Yeah, they were not going to believe it.
Yeah, one of the big themes of this book, I think, is that
the ineptitude of the
agencies must communicate and share information. Yes. Apparently.
Right.
So they need an agency to change agencies to share agencies information between agencies. Anyway, so it's a book about bureaucracy, really.
It really is.
Red tape and weather.
They should have called it The Red Tape.
The Red Tape, yes. The fog causes lots of delicious havoc across the countryside. Starting small, picking off some families and stray people and cars and a busload of schoolboys.
Cows. Pigeons.
Pigeons, yep.
All sorts of arrays of people.
Finally takes an entire town and ends up
taking London.
Taking London, because it's always only a matter of time before London gets hit. In the meantime, the agencies decide to finally cooperate, communicate. They find out that one of the agencies is actually partially to blame.
Well, you're really telling the whole story, aren't you?
And in the end, Jesus comes down and everyone is saved.
Yes. It was really strange. I didn't expect that.
I didn't see that coming at all.
No.
No. That last part is, strictly speaking, not true. Although Mike here wouldn't know that because he kept dozing off during that last part.
I did. I hate to say it. You weren't supposed to say that to anybody.
Okay, well then I didn't.
So there was kind of the way the book was structured. I mean, you have this main character,
John Holman.
Yeah. Then you're following his escapades.
Yes.
Really trying to convince people that this is real, and then trying to be helpful.
Once they realize
that it's real, and he has an immunity to this, the effects of this
fog.
Yeah. And the fog really isn't a fog. There's this kind of this protozoa type.
Yeah, there's some kind of.
It's a kind of a virus that doesn't have a cell structure.
Yeah.
And it uses the fog, and the fog is produced by kind of interacting with carbon dioxide and then the pollution.
That's right. There's also the whole pollution thing going on here, too.
And that creates sort of this protective layer to this cell, this virus that infects people. And what's the
effect then? The effect on the people is that it causes...
It's sort of like a cancer. It sort of like goes into the brain, and it's sort of like a cancer. It starts to kind of destroy cells in the brain.
Yes, and it causes them to do some very self-destructive, antisocial things.
Yeah, and it's a biological weapon, we find out at some point.
Eventually you find out that that not only was it a bio that the government produces this gas, this fog,
but they ineptly stored it.
Yeah, and they ineptly stored it, but they also ineptly released it by doing underground bomb testing nearby and ruptured the place where it was kept. Oh, the government!
Oh, the stupid Brits! Once again!
Once again!
That's the plot.
That's the plot.
That's the danger. This creature. Yeah. This mindless.
Yeah.
So here's what I was thinking as I was reading this.
Uh-huh.
Is it sort of reminded me of the movie Twister, because you have this phenomenon that doesn't have any will, right? Yes. But they try to place a will upon it.
Yes. They try. It doesn't really have, it's not
like it has a plot or anything. Yeah, it's just doing its thing. And just like tornadoes don't plan to take out the daughters of the father that they killed 20 years before this tornado comes back. That's what it reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's like, how is he going to make this? He's got to sort of create a character out of it somehow.
Well, he does. Yeah, he tries to make it into a character, you know, and it does with some things that, seem kind of stealthy, like it hides underground at one point, and
it glows.
But he doesn't actually go all the way, thankfully, to make it like, oh, it's an intelligent gas.
Except it kind of does at the end, when you've got the inspector, who now is going mad, and he's sort of like the avatar for the fog in a way, because he's who you have the last stand with is the right and it sort of comes off as if he is the personification of the fog, knowing that the fog is about to die. It kind of does that, but not overtly. But
yeah, it's a little more subtle than that, but
not that subtle.
No. But the book. We should say one thing here. Both of us, when we chose this book, were under the impression that this was the basis for the John Carpenter movie.
Yeah, I kept going, when are they going to start?
Where's the sea captain thing going to
be? And when are they going to be locked up in the store?
Yeah,
and
where's Adrian Barbeau, the sexy radio host? It has nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
Except
they're both fogs.
They're both fogs. And both of those, I mean, the movie came out roughly, you know, this book was, you know, it was a big hit. And when you have a big hit book, and back then Hollywood would put a movie out about a year and a half, 2 years afterward, and that's when this movie came out.
Mm.
So I remember reading about the book and saying, they're making a movie, but I'll just watch the movie. I remember not liking the movie.
Oh, I thought you liked the movie.
I mean, I had very dim impressions of the movie. I was really young, so it was probably a little too subtle for my...
Didn't you re-see the movie?
No,
I've never seen it. We've seen The Fog here at your house.
Was I awake?
Yes. Because there was a remake of The Fog.
Yeah, there was.
And we saw that.
I have no recollection. You sure it wasn't My Bloody Valentine?
I'm positive. So apparently you were in The Fog.
I was in The Fog, yeah. I'm already in The Fog, yes. I'm still in The Fog. So, anyway.
We call it being over 40.
It has nothing whatsoever to do with The Fog by John Carpenter. Although I would this would make a really fun, not even a movie, but a goofy, like, three-part British miniseries.
I'm surprised they haven't.
Yeah.
They have. No, I guess. I'm surprised they haven't made it into a movie.
Yeah. Because it's, yeah, it's probably
basically grist for the mill there.
Yeah, I mean, it would be lots of fun to make. So the book I very much enjoyed reading this book because it didn't ask a lot from me. Because I give and I give and I give to these books.
Yes, you do.
And I was thoroughly entertained. I just listened to it in a day and a half maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, I just a couple of bus rides, a couple of long walks, and boom, I was done. Very entertained.
So what was the scariest part for you?
The scariest part for me was probably the part where when the fog affects that entire town and marches them into the sea.
Oh, why was that scary?
It wasn't like so scary so much as it was just
disturbing.
Just horrible, the situation. See, you know, I'm running into the situation where I can't remember if we discussed this on the podcast on the one that we did. I think we have. This is the first time I've mentioned it when we've actually been recording. Was the scene where we were led up to this scene where this town of, I can't remember what the name of the town was, gets affected by the fog. But the whole lead up to that scene is the story of this young woman who whose lesbian lover has like left her, and she is suicidal, and she is going to walk into the sea and drown herself. And she walks into the sea, and she's walking, and she's, you know, as happens, she suddenly thinks, oh, I want to live, and she comes back, and she's walking back to the shore. She looks up the shore, and there is 10,000 crazy people walking toward her, and she cannot escape them, and they just push her right into the sea, and down she goes. Oh, the irony. there's a couple of scenes like that, but that one, I don't know. I mean, when I step back and I think about it, I was like, well, that doesn't really belong in this book, but you know what? It totally does. And it was really fun.
So my couple of my favorite, scenes were, one is where the pastor, he's doing his morning constitutional and he walks into the fog and then he comes out of the fog.
Scared by some cows.
And then he goes to do his sermon and he lifts up his
cassock,
his garments, and starts peeing on the congregation. I
know. There's a fair amount of comedy in this book too, which is also part of the reason I like it. That scene was just delightfully British and subversive.
And then the other one closely related was that they're really, the cow herder is trying to get the cows to go somewhere, and the cows all turn on the farmer and just start trampling him. Yep. The mad cow disease before the fact.
The other fantastic and really riveting scene, because it's so horrible and so, I don't know, just out of control, was the school bus full of
and it's probably boys. The longest story in the book.
The story about the story about the schoolmaster and the boys, and they all get infected. The whole bus full gets infected, and it takes a little while to get back to school before the entity or whatever the thing takes effect, and they just go crazy, and it's this big weird orgy that ends with them cutting each other, and there's a scene with shears
and a
bit of dangly bits, and it's thoroughly horrible, and then it all goes up in smoke. They like burn the place.
Yeah,
that was an effective
because
scene.
They were doing it all smiling and
being
all like sexually charged, and then snip.
Do you ever see that movie that early Malcolm McDowell movie called If?
No.
It was directed by Lindsay Anderson. He went on to make Oh Lucky Man, was a sequel to it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a story about Malcolm McDowell plays a student in a boys' school in Britain. It's just like boys, like boy hijinks for the most part, until the end when he's in his dorm room with a sniper rifle picking off people in the...
Nice. If anything I learned about the British school system is that I never wanted to be in one of those. The only bad things happen in those.
Yeah, even Hogwarts.
Even Hogwarts had its bad moments. I might go to Hogwarts.
You probably would. So what else about this book? This book does not invite deep philosophical discussion.
Well, it's making jabs at things, though. It's making jabs at, you know, man polluting the world.
Yeah.
It's making jabs at the stupidity of war.
And silly bureaucracy.
It's making, it was, you know, it's tried to make a jab at, there's some people who go mad and all they do is sort of their routine anyway, while the world's falling apart. There's people waiting at the bus stop looking at their watch.
Yeah.
And they're equally as mad. It was like,
yeah, it's people crooning down the street with no pants on, crashing on the light poles. there was one of the things that we were talking about before we started recording was that this book takes on the theme of homosexuality once in a while in a very odd 1970s way. And you read it now and you're like, ooh, I don't know. So anyway, what did you think about those scenes?
Well, I have to say I'm a little sensitive to it because I always get a little pissed about... because usually the hero in the story is heterosexual, and so you get this really sense of how horny this guy always is,
and how many women he's had.
Yes, and
but he's never really loved one until maybe this new one.
Right, who goes mad for him and actually goes mad,
and then he decides he loves her and decides to save her and settle down.
Right, and now he loves her because now she's in trouble. But so. You know, just like in anything in the world, all the examples of the, there's always this wide range of things for heterosexuals, but then the homosexuals, there's only like two.
Yeah.
So the one is this, the headmaster.
Yes.
Who's his backstory is he's the, when he was in the war, they think, he comes off as being some sort of war hero, but actually he gets preyed upon by some straight people who he hit on one of them, and people go.
So yeah,
the other soldiers go berserk, and there's
they ambush him and bash him.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's this mishap, and he loses his arm, and then he gets discharged from the service. So here you got this closeted homosexual who now is leading a celibate life, and pushing down his desires for other men.
Yes,
and then there's this overlay of he's going to be accused of pedophilia, even though that's not even a part of this.
Exactly.
And of course, he has one arm, so he's deformed.
Uh-huh.
And he's deformed, and he's also been pushed out of the service, and he has to hide his past. Yeah. And and of course, he's the one who gets his penis cut off.
Yeah, of course, he's the one who's in.
This is just
in the boys' school orgy scene. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's actually probably more horrible to read today because,
and you can't read it without thinking that this is the punishment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
For sexual, and actually he does this throughout the book because there's these two men who are mad who are going to rape this girl and, he runs them over with the bus. So anything that has a sexual.
Yes.
Tone to it, there's a punishment of some sort.
Yeah.
And he does the same thing. They're going, all these horrible things are happening, right? But they're going through the town in this kind of Humvee vehicle, and they see this town in a mass orgy.
Yes.
And they're just disgusted because there's babies having orgies.
I know.
And everybody's having orgies.
It's a little extreme.
Yeah.
And they just turn away.
And so it's those, he's sort of, you kind of wonder what, what that's about.
Yeah. And then there's the other main story, which we touched on a little bit, was the suicidal woman who wants to kill herself because the first person that she's ever been sexual with turns out to be a woman, and she can't and she's in love with her, and then this woman leaves our hero for the time being for a man, right? Yeah, she leaves her for a man,
you need to grow out of it.
And exactly. Yeah. That was college.
Right.
But she she's horribly ashamed of her past, of her relationship with this woman. The woman who's fallen in love with a man and says, he can never know. And
I feel like I was dirty, but now he makes me clean.
You feel clean. And I'm like, oh dear.
Right.
Right. So but a goodly amount of that is I've read these kind of passages before from books written in the late 60s and early 70s into the 70s where it's post Stonewall the gay themes have started making their way into mainstream fiction and genre fiction, and all these straight authors are struggling to try to, like, you know, write about it, and they just, you know, it's interesting to see how they fail. It'll be interesting to see how people 40 years from now, who will no doubt be listening to our podcast, see how we fail. Because we fail in so many ways.
We'll be ahead of our time. Are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
I'm channeling the future.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me of those exploitation novels where, you know, it's always illicit. It's always, there's always some punishment. There's always some shame. It's kind of boys in the band, the children's hour kind of.
Sure, sure.
Angst. And you couldn't write it that way anymore. It really basically was a window into a time, but it was sort of annoying.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like, yeah, we're going on that metaphor, the window into a time. It's more like, right now you can just, like, you know, go into the next room and see it, but back then it was all still just like keyhole. It's like just little glimpses of somebody peeking through a keyhole and trying to make sense of a world that they don't understand. And now the world is, you know, it's more mainstream.
And to be fair, every person in the book who's gone mad or whatever all had a suffering, so you can't say he just pinned it on the gays.
No, absolutely.
Every one of those characters who went mad had an issue of some sort.
Oh yeah,
and an unhappiness. And
yeah, no,
that, I mean, just that got magnified by this virus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, throwing gay and lesbian themes into this novel was just part of the grab bag. It's like it's what novelists did back then to seem modern and, you know, cutting edge.
With it.
With it, yeah, exactly.
James Herbert, you're so groovy.
I mean, listening to his introduction, he seems like he's actually, like, kind of, you know, savvy, and he knows, you know, this is one of his earliest novels, and he considers this kind of a flawed piece of juvenilia. But he declined to change it. He's like, you know, this is what I wrote back then, and it did well, and I'm not going to mess with it.
I kind of see the main character as, like, having one of those round beds with the mirrors on the ceilings and his groovy bell bottoms. And
big sideburns. Maybe a sideburns going
through the mustache. Hey, man, why are you trying to ruin my buzz?
Hey, I thought we had a good time. You don't have to harsh it.
So, and there's this other plot with his woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the horrible revelation that her father isn't her father, and that he secretly has desires for her.
Yeah, he wants to marry her.
And he loves me, but he loves me in that way.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which was kind of funny.
Yeah, funny. Yeah, it was kind of inconsequential.
Right.
And she did actually kill him, didn't she?
She killed him.
With the scissors.
And she didn't feel bad about it.
Well, you know.
Turns out.
Well, you know.
She was mad.
She had mad fog's disease.
So here's what's funny about this book.
Okay.
So the mystery is, how are we going to stop this thing? Can it be stopped? Mm-hmm. Can we stop it in time? And, you know, there's this, there's the plot, the gimmick is that because John is immune, he has to be the closest in contact to it to sort of get a sample of the virus in its pure form so they can create a way to inoculate people, right? Yeah, so there's lots of failed attempts of him doing this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they allude to the idea that they can stop it with some kind of inoculation.
Yeah.
That they were going to mass inoculate the city somehow and probably, but not really, and perhaps blow up the where the fog is to kind of contain it.
Yeah.
But unless I fell asleep during all this, they never...
I thought we weren't going to talk about you falling asleep.
They never got to that part.
They never get to it, no.
You know, the hero has his last sort of fight with another mad character, and then that's kind of it.
Yeah, they blow it up in a tunnel, right?
Yeah. But did they...
A tunnel under the river.
Yeah, you never really get the sense... You never find out what happens.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Which is... Yeah. It just sort of ends.
Yeah, it sort of ends.
Like, he's tired.
Yeah.
He's like, he even says, I'm tired and I just want to have a good long nap or something. And it's like, the end.
Yeah, we've reached the page limit. Let's wrap this up.
And you kind of get the sense that the author got tired after a while, too. Like,
well, you know, he sort of hit this groove where he kept spinning and spinning and spinning these. He figured a way to keep spinning these stories, you know, more mayhem, find a personal story, kill that person, more mayhem, move the fog. It's like, you know, I could do this all day.
You could do this all month. Yeah, you could. You could have just
and
kept
so
going.
He decided to arbitrarily stop it. Yeah, that's the best possible end. The end. Did you have any visceral reaction to the plane crash scene?
Yes.
Yeah, there's
I thought, well, that was prescient. Yeah. Had that been done before?
You know, it may have been, but I don't know that it had been. There's a scene in which a pilot gets infected and he loses his shit just as he gets into the cockpit, and he flies a plane into a tall building in London.
Good morning, Kevin.
So, you remember that? No, I don't. What's that from?
Well, because the pilot's wife hooks up, leaves the pilot, so she's going to leave him. And it's a failed marriage anyway, but she's going to leave him for this guy named Kevin who works in this building, this experimental radar building.
Sure.
And that's where he crashes the plane. Yep. Into that building, and I think what he says as he crashes the plane is good morning, Kevin, or something like that.
Oh dear. Well, that was that was supposed to be a pretty spectacular thing when he wrote it, but it rings a little bit differently these days.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, not that this has anything to do with me at all.
Uh-huh.
So let's just say that, but I was reading the book right when that shooting happened. So to have that whole school thing.
Oh, the Sandy Hook.
Right.
Yeah.
And
It
was sort of weird too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean that's the effect of the fog is the fog infects people and they suddenly go and do something as crazy and senseless as that Sandy Hook shooting.
Right.
And so you imagine entire towns doing that, the mayhem that would ensue.
But all the madness really is based on some sort of hidden resentment or desire.
Yep.
So it's really sort of the shadow of people actually getting its due.
Yeah.
In a way, it's sort of like that book we read, Pandemonium.
Yeah.
Where... you know, they sort of get infected with a demon or something, mm-hmm. but the demon really is their hidden,
hidden
resentments or their ids or whatever. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm surprised that the depth that we have drawn
I wouldn't call it depth. I would call it breadth.
Breadth.
And length.
Yes. The juice we've squeezed from this lemon. So, speaking of lemons, which you can sometimes use for drinks, like cocktails.
What are you alluding to?
I'm alluding to
You're being very subtle.
I'm alluding to the fact that it's cocktail.
It is cocktail. All right.
What are we drinking? What are we drinking here?
I don't know.
All right. Well,
what the hell is this?
I don't know. I knew it a little while ago, but it's all getting hazy again. So here's what you do. You get a
shaker.
You get a shaker. You put in a shot of Canadian Mist whiskey.
Yes.
You put in a shot of Bernard Loiseau apple and Earl Grey liqueur, which should be easy if expensive to find in Britain. I'm not sure if you can find it in America, but you can maybe try to.
But we found it.
But we found it in America. Then you put in a teaspoon of powdered sugar. And what else? Is that it?
Egg white.
Oh, and an egg white.
So you can use those. They have those pasteurized egg whites that you can get at the store. It's part of the egg beater family of products.
But I like to take my gastrointestinal chances.
So if you're gonna,
so
and I do not.
So put that all there with some crushed ice and shake the hell out of it. What's going to happen then is it's going to get
really... How much egg white do you think you would put in there? Like a whole egg white?
A whole egg white.
Okay.
Per drink, yeah. Because it's, you know, it's protein.
Mm-hmm.
Shake, shake, shake. And so it gets really cloudy, foggy, if you will.
And get it, Canadian Mist.
Get it, Mist.
Get it.
See what we did there? So, and then just decant that into a chilled cocktail glass. And what do we call that?
Fog on the brain.
Fog on the brain. There you go. All right. So
let's go down to the basement. Here we go.
Wow, it's nice down here. You cleaned?
No. You're just drunk.
Okay.
So when you have fog on the brain, the dust goes away.
It will eventually. I'll get better.
All soon. The girls look pretty.
So what are we going to read?
Well, I would like to read one of our other favorite authors, perhaps.
Yeah.
We joined the dude who wrote Pandemonium.
Yeah, you just mentioned Pandemonium. So Daryl Gregory, it's been a while. That was his first book, so he's got some other ones out there.
Yeah, I don't want to do that one.
His latest one is a kind of a zombie book. It's a different take on the zombie. Because, of course, you can't publish a zombie book now without publishing a different take on the zombie.
Right, there's nothing left but different takes.
But we're going to do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
It's called Raising Stony Mayhaw by Daryl Gregory, 2011, relatively new book. And it counts as forbidden because we vowed not to read any more zombie books for a while, and here we are breaking our laws.
Yeah, 2013, no, let's not do any zombie books.
Except
let's do our best to get away from a zombie
book. Except this will be January 2013.
Oh, what did I say?
2013.
Okay. Well, but
after this one,
yeah,
we won't do any more zombie books. All right, fair enough. Well, because maybe by then, Joe Hill's new vampire book will be out.
I wonder what the new thing will be, because zombies have been mined to death, right?
Angels.
We keep saying that, but
I'm unconvinced.
I don't think it's gonna. I don't think it can happen.
No. I think it's gonna be fogs, various weather phenomena, twisters, fogs. Slick roads, black ice,
humidity.
Yes,
the humidity,
and pollen,
and what the worst thing it does is like frizzes your hair.
Yeah, exactly.
The horror,
your hair is. His, stay away from him. His hair is frizzy. He's gone. He's been infected.
Run! All right, let's get out of this basement.
All right, let's get it.
The jokes are getting bad.
Very bad. All right.
Yeah.
You have anything else?
No.
So it's.
I'm very disappointed in this current apocalypse. Is all I gotta say.
I know we're recording this the day after the apocalypse. You know, on Boing Boing the other day, they had a link to a calendar a company that was selling the 2013 Mayan calendar.
Is this all blank pages?
No, it's just it's a regular calendar, but it's the gall to sell and to produce and sell a 2013 Mayan calendar. Anyway, yeah, so post-apocalypse. So everything now is post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, what if this is what the apocalypse is like, pretty much, we're in it? What if this is the afterlife now?
There have been some Tuesdays when I'm feeling very like as though it could not get any worse.
Oh, when will humanity learn?
Oh!
When will they learn? Stop predicting the end of the world.
I know, and start making it. Wow, that was nihilistic.
What was that Mark Twain thing? You can't... something about the weather, you can't... All you can... What's his phrase?
Oh, I don't know.
Well...
The rumors of my death have been exaggerated.
Whatever that Mark Twain phrase is, just apply it to the apocalypse.
All right, exactly. Consider it applied.
Okay. And it would be funny. ironic.
And then write us and tell us what it was.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. We're all done. I'm gonna go downstairs now and maybe bake some cookies or something.
That sounds very
it's a good thing
Christmassy.
To do. Yeah, because that's the time of the year we're at.
I'm gonna make atheist biscuits.
Atheist biscuits. I'm gonna make scorn muffins. All right.
I'm gonna take a piece of bread and cut out the center of it, and then crack an egg to it and call it Jesus in a Manger.
Jesus in a Manger. All right. We're out of here.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh wait! Stop.
What?
We have to cut off its head.
Oh. Stuff it full of holly and mistletoe, and burn it on a Yule log. And if it's still burning in the morning, it'll be a lucky year.
That sounds good.
All right.
All right, bye.
Bye.